You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7. ESPN.
I'm having a great time. Hopefully you are as well. Anita Marks with you on this Saturday afternoon here on 98.7 ESPN. Jacob is producing the show back in the studio. Jacob, good afternoon. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well this afternoon. How about you?
Okay. Well, you were about to say really well, and then you went to pretty well.
Yeah, you know.
I heard that R. That R peaked its little head, and then you said pretty well. Hopefully you're doing really well.
I am doing really well, but I am hungry too. So
no, that's what it's about. So are we borderline hangry? Because I get hangry.
I don't think so yet, but by 2 or 3, I will be getting hangry.
Okay, so it's and I have like I think chicks get hangry a lot faster than dudes get hangry. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely agree. I think I would only get hangry if I was like sitting out in the sweltering sun. Then I'll be hangry for a reason.
And for folks that are saying, what is she talking about? Hangry is a combination of hungry and angry. And we call it hangry. So it's when you've crossed that line where you're absolutely famished and you're starving and you don't feel well. And these like, you're just these things are growing out of your forehead. Like you become possessed and you become the devil and you're just like you just that's hangry. So Jacob, hopefully we don't reach that level for you in the next 3 hours. We've got a great show lined up for you. One of my favorites, Bobby Marks, is going to join us this hour. Oh, in about 26 minutes to be exact, to talk about some NBA. We have arrived, have we not? The NBA has crushed the bubble, and kudos to Silver and everybody who engineered this bubble concept, and they really pulled it off. We are now just hours away, 2.5 hours away from that play-in game where the number 9 seed Memphis is going to be taking on Portland. Portland favored by 6. Tip-off is at 2:30 this afternoon. So finally, we get some playoff basketball. And not that we haven't seen good basketball in this bubble, we certainly have. But as you know, and as I know, and as Jacob knows, and you know, once we get to this point where you know it's win and you're in, lose, and as the fellas on TNT like to say, go fishing. It's come to that. So this is how it works right now. So at 2:30 this afternoon is tip off. The Memphis Grizzlies will go up against the Portland Trailblazers. Again, Portland is favored by 6. If Portland wins, done deal. That's it. One play-in game. If Memphis wins, then Memphis has to win again in order to get in and be the seed to face the Lakers in round one of that first series. And that Sunday game would take place at 4:30 if Memphis wins. So Bobby Marks will join us, and we'll break down that game that's happening again later on today at 2:30. So really, really excited about that. Also, we'll talk about the Nets, their series against the Raptors. That tips off at 4 o'clock on Monday. And really the big question here, and I'd love to open up the phone lines, 800-919-3776. I mean, who's this Nets team that we've been seeing play in the bubble so far? And, you know, I think the big question is this Nets team better without Kyrie? As crazy and as foolish and as wild and as that question is, I will admit it. Are they? Because we've seen a very different Nets team play and have success in the bubble than we have with Kyrie on the court. Is this a Kyrie thing, or is this a bubble thing? Because you know, obviously the bubble presents a whole different vibe and feel to what's happening, right? Like, as we know, there's no home court advantage. There's no travel issues. So, and I'm really excited to talk to Bobby Marks about this. Like, so teams that are playing in the bubble, what matters in regard to team makeup? You know, I like to call certain players alpha males when it comes to, you know who they are, LeBron James, Kawhi, guys like that, Damian Lillard. You know, those are your alpha males. And there's so much that is expected of them with everything that encompasses playing as a professional team on the road, the professionalism, the schedule, the travel, this and that, the fan base. You know, these guys are pulled in a million and one different directions because they are the faces of the NBA. That's not what these teams are dealing with right now. It's a whole nother set of circumstances. It's a whole nother set of situations that I think are allowing certain teams and certain players to be more successful in the bubble because of the circumstances that they're not facing any longer. And so I'm curious to talk to Bobby about that and if he has realized that as well and if he agrees with me. Also, there's some talk out there in regard to who the next head coach potentially could be for the Nets. I know that we've spent some time talking about Mark Jackson, and we know that KD has been very verbal and vocal about that's who he would like to see the Nets bring in. But there's some talk and speculation that just maybe Popovich could come in. I know he's 71 years old. He's got a lot of tenure with the Spurs, but he does have a relationship with Sean Marks. Keep in mind, Sean Marks not only played for Pop in San Antonio, but also worked for Pop as a coach. So there is a relationship there. There is a connection there. You know, can Sean at least get a meeting? And would that be the head coach that the Nets need to take them to the next level? It's really exciting. I think it's an exciting time if you are a Nets fan right now. Again, just based on what you've seen, how this Nets team has played in the bubble. Again, I'm really curious, and I'll open up the phone lines, 800-919-3776. Is it that you feel that this is a Nets team with better chemistry, the way the small ball that they're playing, the way that they are able to generate points and play defense? Is this a result of being in a bubble, or is this a result of Kyrie Irving not being there in the bubble and not on the roster? 800-919-3776. And their next series against the Raptors, I think, will be fun and will be interesting. So we'll talk to Bobby Marks about that. Some other topics pertaining to, a lot of these series. Like, everybody's anticipating, like I said, Portland is favored by 6. Everybody's anticipating Portland to advance to the postseason and be that next seed that's going to go up against the Lakers. Based on what we've seen, let's be honest. I think we're all in agreement here. Damian Lillard has been the MVP of the bubble. So, based on what we've seen from Portland and how they've been able to play and Damian Lillard and what he's been able to bring to that bubble and that program and have the success that they have, he's averaging almost 40 points a game. They're 6-3 in the bubble. If Portland is the team that advances, do they even have a shot? Are the Lakers sitting back and going, oh, please, we really want Memphis to win. That's a better matchup for us. We don't want to face Portland. We don't want to face Damian Lillard. Dude put up over 60 points at one point in one game in this bubble. And then I question, Oklahoma City, the Thunder, going up against the Houston Rockets. No Westbrook for Houston. What does that mean? Can the Thunder come in and upset the Rockets? I think that's a possibility as well. So I think that there are some upsets that very, very, very possibly could take place in these series. So a number of things we're going to talk to Bobby Marks about. Also coming up at 1 o'clock, that's Appointment Radio. You've heard him here before. He's a very dear friend of me, a friend of mine. Dr. Nick Morrissey is going to join us. I filled in for the fellas, DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg this week, and the main story and the majority of the conversation that I had when I filled in for them this week was what the decision in regard to college football and what took place, right? We know that there's a number of conferences that have decided to step out of the fall season. The MAC being really the first domino to fall. Mountain West was the next. And then, of course, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 followed. So there's a number of programs that are not going to participate in the fall. Now, they're saying that they would like to participate in the spring. I've made a ton of phone calls to a number of scouts and a number of people well-connected in college football. And everybody's telling me no way they play in the spring. No way. They just can't. Their top players won't play in the spring. It's just too close to, the draft and the next NFL season happening. So pretty much, you know, those teams that now have decided to forego the fall season and aim for the spring, they're still, I wouldn't even call it a 50-50. Based on the conversations I've had, maybe there's a 30% chance that there'll be spring football, especially if you listen to the experts. And like I said, we're going to have Dr. Nick Morrissey on with us. The COVID-19 and, no vaccine when the fall and the winter roll around. Chances are, unfortunately, I hate to say it, I like to be an optimist here, the COVID-19 contraction rate more than likely is going to go up. So, which is not good. So we're going to talk about all that with Dr. Nick Morrissey. And a big reason why that we're hearing from the universities that why they've decided to opt out is because they're finding more and more young men who are college athletes are coming down with a heart issue. And it's pretty severe. And that heart issue affects the heart muscle. And it has long-term effects. Even if you're asymptomatic, you don't necessarily have to be, and what we're hearing is, athletes, let's be honest, college athletes, professional athletes, some of the healthiest human beings on the planet. And we live in a country, unfortunately, that we're not so healthy. And so when we hear about an athlete being tested positive for COVID-19, they're not going to the hospital. They're not being placed on any kind of breathing apparatus. They're not taking all these crazy medicines, that we hear our government talk about all the time. They're typically asymptomatic. But just because you're asymptomatic doesn't mean that there are not other outcomes that can affect your body, especially long term. And this is a big concern, a big reason why you have a lot of these conferences that are opting out to play in the fall. Now, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, they've decided they've dug their heels in. They said right now we're moving along as though we are starting in September. Some are starting September 5th. Some are starting September 26th. Now, could that change as we get closer to that start date? It could. But as of right now, I want to say you have 77 programs that are still on board to play in the fall. And now you have 55 programs that have opted out of the fall and are hoping, fingers crossed, that they could play in the spring. So I thought it would be a good time to have Dr. Nick Morrissey join us to really dive into, because I'm curious. I would imagine if I'm curious, I would imagine you're curious, exactly, what are the heart conditions that these young athletes are suffering from right now, even though they're asymptomatic? Why are they asymptomatic and coming down with these heart issues? So Dr. Nick Morrissey is going to join us at 1 o'clock. And as always, good friend of mine, Cynthia Freeland, will join us in our final hour around 2 o'clock. We'll get into some NFL talk as camps are open. And this week, yesterday and today, our practices are happening. Now, does that mean that they're out there practicing in pads and tackling? I don't know. I highly doubt it. But we're 2 weeks away. Unbelievable, right? We are just a few weeks away from the NFL season starting. So a lot to get to. Obviously, Major League Baseball, big storyline with Aaron Judge being placed on the IL because of a calf, 10-day IL. What does that mean for the Yankees moving forward? Gerrit Cole looked great last night. He's 4-0 now. So they've got another game against the Red Sox later on tonight around 7:15, his first pitch. The Mets not so great. They lost to the Phillies. Thank you very much, Bryce Harper, RBI in the ninth. So they lose to the Phillies 6-5 last night. So we'll get into a lot of Major League Baseball talk, NBA playoffs kicking off. The Islanders are 2-0 against the Capitals. Man, college football and that drama. More Cincinnati Red players have tested positive. What does that mean? Their series against the Pittsburgh Pirates has been postponed. There's just so much to get to. Good thing we have 3 hours with you today.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Damian Lillard, superstar, MVP of the bubble. I would imagine that Bobby Marks does agree with me. He's joining us now here on 98.7 ESPN. Bobby, thank you so much, as always, taking your time to join us on a Saturday afternoon. Damian Lillard has just been really, really unbelievable. I've become an immense fan in the past few weeks since he's really been active and attractive in this bubble.
No, you're right. I mean, even in the... you know, the game he scored 61, I think that was the, was it the Dallas game? I thought he would have to go for 70 just based on, you know, the problem with Portland is the inability to get stops on the defensive end, and it's putting so much pressure on Damian as far as to, you know, give them these 45-plus point nights that we've seen the last, you know, three or four games here. And I think the ultimate credit or the ultimate tribute is when you saw Brooklyn basically trying to trap him at half court when he came over over the half court line the other night in their win. So he has certainly taken it up to a different level. You always say when guys, you know, sign these supermax contracts like Lillard did last summer and hasn't even kicked in yet, usually teams are kind of rewarding for it from the past, and they don't fulfill, you know, what the money amount. But he is as good as advertised. He is. He's certainly a joy to watch, and he's got a great will to win, and that's the big thing.
So, in hearing a lot of analysts talk this week about Lillard, and of course, you know, the over 60 points he put up in the game, and those that cover the NBA, some have put out there that he is not beyond the NBA, that he is hands down one of the best captains in sport. Yeah. Would you agree to that?
Oh, I would. I think especially in a day and age where we see so many players go to different teams, you know, that they're not happy if it's a mid market, and maybe they're not happy with a front office as far as how they're building the roster here. He's willing to stick it out, and I think that is the ultimate leader. And I know we all laughed about, you know, when he went back and forth with the, you know, Paul George and Patrick Beverley last year, and you know, Damian hit it right on the head. And no, this is no offense to Paul George, but you know, Damian has stayed there in Portland, where, you know, Paul had asked out in Indiana and he asked out in Oklahoma City, and now he's on his, you know, he's on his third team here, where Lillard is, you know, the face of that organization here. And so, yeah, I think that is the ultimate captain, where basically you can say, "Get on my shoulders. I can get you as far as I can."
So as we know, 2:30 tip off, you've got that play-in game, Portland being the eighth seed, Memphis the ninth seed, which means if Portland wins, they're in. If Memphis wins, then we've got another game on Sunday at 4:30. A lot of people, Portland is favored by 6, Bobby, so a lot of people expecting Portland to win. Let's say hypothetically, well, first of all, before I go there, how do you see this play-in series panning out?
Yeah, I don't think we see a game, you know, tomorrow, which would be, you know, Memphis would have to force a win today. I think Portland's offense is too much. You know, certainly the injuries with, you know, with Jaren Jackson Jr. there. I don't know if Memphis has enough to kind of keep up, even if, as I said, Portland's defense is lacking here. So that would basically set us up for a Portland-LA first round, which would be probably one of the harder 1-8 series that we've seen in a long time.
All right, so hypothetically speaking then, if you and probably the rest of the country believe that Portland's going to advance, do you feel they have what it takes to possibly either upset the Lakers or take that series to the limit?
I do, and I think we remove the home court element, right? I mean, I think if this was in L.A. and you know, you get four games in Staples, I would certainly say, yeah, I mean, you know, the Lakers will probably, you know, maybe steal a game on the road and hold serve, but as we've seen with this neutral site, you know, teams are really even here. And I know the Lakers have struggled, and I get it that they basically had clinched the number one seed early in the seeding games here, and you know they've struggled shooting the ball here. But I think the big thing for me is what the health of C.J. McCollum is. I know he labored through the previous game, which was the Dallas game. He played really well against Brooklyn. He's got a back injury here. But I think if C.J. is at full strength with Lillard and Carmelo, I think Joseph Nurkic has played at a really high level, and then you've got Gary Trent. Yeah, I could see this that series certainly going the distance there.
All right, before we talk about other series that we already know is locked and loaded and ready to roll, I want to talk about the Nets. 4 o'clock on Monday, tip off against the Raptors, that series. They played great basketball and leads to a lot of questions, and one specific, and that is this team better without Kyrie Irving? Bobby, what do you think about that?
Well, they're different, you know, and I think Karis has the ball. Karis LeVert has the ball in his hands more. I think that's going to be the big question when you get Kyrie back and you've got Spencer Dinwiddie back, two guys that need the ball in their hands. Now what happens to the role of Karis LeVert? I think they are well-coached. As I said the other night against Portland, you've got to keep an eye for their foot speed. They move the ball essentially well. But, yeah, I don't know if they're better. But I would say maybe different. But when you can add a Kyrie and you can add a KD to this group and you get Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan, I mean, this is going to be a tough team next year. So we'll see what happens next year. I think, you know, Jacques Vaughn has certainly made a strong case to keep this job. And I know there's always that appeal to kind of look what's on the outside there. But what I learned, Anita, when I went through with P.J. Carlissimo in 2012-13 when P.J. took over in the interim, sometimes what you have within the organization is a lot better than what's outside. And I think teams kind of get caught up in that a little bit there. And that's probably one of my bigger regrets is that, you know, we let P.J. go and we, you know, hired Jason Kidd, who certainly did a good job. But I think the familiarity factor should favor Jacques. And as I said, he has done a great job because I didn't know how many games these guys were going to win down there.
Again, Bobby Marks joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. No relation, by the way. We always have to.
Well, I did say distant cousin, right? There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I think we've had this discussion before. You haven't done the, like, Ancestry or 23andMe, or is it 23andMe?
Oh, I've done it.
You have?
Yeah. You don't pop up on there. I'm sorry.
I know. So funny. So in regard to the Nets, and you know, you mentioned the head coaching situation. You know, we've heard from KD and what he would like, and that's to bring Mark Jackson in. He's been very vocal in regard to that. Today, you know, prepping for the show, you know, there's now some talk and speculation about Popovich. I know he's 71 years old. You know, when you think of Pop, you think of the Spurs, but he does have a relationship with Sean Marks. Do you think that Sean at least gets a meeting and sits down and maybe pitches the Nets to Pop?
You know, it was funny when Kenny Atkinson was let go in March. You know, I was texting back and forth with one of our writers, and I said the ultimate wild card would be, and this is not any inside information, would be Greg Popovich, right? That would be the ultimate wild card just because of his relationship with Sean Marks. You know, Pop's kind of, you know, towards the end of probably his coaching career. And this is probably his last chance to coach a championship roster, although that San Antonio team, you saw some good things there. I would certainly lob a call down there to Archie Buford, their head of basketball operations, see what the interest level will be. I think that would be the most intriguing name to come out of it. You know, certainly Mark Jackson, I think it's disappointing that he has not been able to get an opportunity after those years in Golden State. You know, he's been in the league for a long time here. So, but the one thing is that, you know, when you make this hire, whoever it is, I mean, you've got to get it right. I mean, because you cannot be going through looking for another coach, you know, a year or two from now.
All right, let's head back to the playoffs and some of the series that are out there. Another one that I find really interesting is OKC going up against the Rockets. And from what we understand, Westbrook is not going to be ready. I like to call it active and attractive for that first game. OKC, you could get them at plus 184, by the way, to win this series. And there's a number of people feel that this very well could be another upset in the playoff series. Are you buying that at all?
Yeah, I haven't picked them. You know, we have our writers picked who we're going to pick in the series, and I had Oklahoma City in six games. I think it's the only series out of the eight that we all differed on opinions. It was pretty much chalk across the board. But, I mean, Chris Paul is healthy right now. That is the big thing for me. The Westbrook injury is the wild card. I think Oklahoma City matches up really well. Gilgeous Alexander and Dennis Schroeder with the three-guard lineup there. I think the Thunder can go small. I think you could probably put Gallinari at the five if you had to. They've got a good bench. I think Billy Donovan's done a really good job. So, yeah, I think even with Westbrook coming back, I would probably still favor Oklahoma City a lot in this series.
Interesting. And another series, probably one that I'm really looking forward to, is the Heat and the Pacers. You know, Jimmy Butler, T.J. Warren. I know Miami has had a lot of success against Indiana this season, but I love the way the Heat has been playing, right?
Yeah, this is going to be a feisty series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These teams do not like each other one a bit at all. And I think when they played each other, I think twice in the past week, this thing will probably go the distance here. Certainly if Butler is, you know, healthy and, you know, with Goran Dragic, and I think a little bit of a wild card is Kendrick Nunn and Duncan Robinson, two guys in Miami who, you know, this is their first playoff experience to kind of go through this with Miami here. But yeah, I mean, we saw T.J. Warren, what he was able to do. I think if Victor Oladipo can see Victor Oladipo from pre-knee injury, this thing will probably go seven games. I do give Miami a little bit of an edge, probably just from a defensive standpoint. I think they can kind of lock you down, and at the end of games, I think they probably have a little bit more of a mental toughness. But this will be a good series.
All right. Before I let you go, is there a series that I have not mentioned that you are most looking forward to, or you see some type of upset, or maybe an unexpected team that you think could take it the distance?
Yeah, I don't know about an upset. I'm intrigued by Dallas, the Clippers series, just with Luka and Porzingis there. I picked the Clippers to win, I think, in five games. I think I'm just interested to see where the Clippers are, if they are at full strength here, because, as I said, they are going to be a really tough out. And, this is Luka's first playoff experience, and we'll see if the regular season kind of carries over here.
Bobby, again, thank you so much for your time. Love your insight, and really do appreciate you joining us on 98.7 ESPN. Enjoy the rest of your week, and enjoy the game later on this afternoon. Should be a good one.
Thanks, Anita. Appreciate it.
You got it. Bobby Marks joining us. Quick break. We come back. We'll continue with your calls. You want to talk about the Nets. Is there a series out there that you feel that there could be an upset? I mean, there's some good odds out there. You know, again, OKC, the Thunder, +184 to upset the Rockets. Curious what that Portland, what those odds would be in regard to them upsetting the Lakers. What a huge upset that would be. Also, who do you have winning this whole damn thing? You know, a lot of people are favoring the Clippers. Obviously the Bucks strong coming out of the East. I love the Heat. And that is going to be a feisty series against the Panthers, against the Pacers. That's for sure. All right. Anita Marks with you here on 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. Coming up at 1 o'clock, again, appointment radio, Dr. Nick Morrissey is going to be joining us. Good friend of mine. And a lot of talk about college football and obviously a lot of conferences that have decided to opt out of the fall season to play and push it to spring. Again, I highly doubt that's going to happen. And a big reason why is because of some of the heart issues that are developing with these young college athletes. Even though they do contract COVID-19, they don't have a lot of horrible signs. Unfortunately, there are some other long-term issues that are developing. It just goes to show you this is a novel virus. We don't know a lot about it. So maybe we can all get a little bit more in the know with Dr. Nick Morrissey, who's going to be joining us.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Nick, do you get hangry?
I was listening to that on the way into this segment, and I actually do. I absolutely do, and I'm not so sure that there's a gender difference, and I'm afraid to say anything about it. But I do get that way, for sure.
All right. I have so many questions for you. So let's dive right into it. Again, one of the biggest storylines, if not the biggest storyline this week, was a number of college football programs, especially two power programs that decided to opt out of the fall. And they're hoping that they could play in the spring. You know, jury's still out. We'll see what happens there. But a big reason why is because, you know, even though we're seeing a lot of athletes, not just college athletes, but athletes in general, when they do contract COVID-19, you know, we're not seeing the very severe symptoms of, you know, folks that we've seen that had to be admitted to hospitals and be placed on breathing apparatuses and all that. But what we are hearing and reading about now is that these young athletes, even though they're asymptomatic, are developing heart issues. So I thought it would be a good idea to have you come onto the show, and because I want to be more in the know. I would imagine my listeners want to be more in the know in regard to, if you can kind of explain to us what is happening here and why this is happening.
Yeah, so this concept of what we call a viral myocarditis, or infection and inflammation actually of the heart muscle, it's not unique to COVID. I mean, if you go back to many different types of viruses, including the initial SARS and then the MERS, which is the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, they all have some degree of attack on the heart muscle. And it's not a high percentage, but it's enough that the infection of the heart, and then more importantly, the inflammatory response to it, can really damage the heart muscle. And it can lead to things like heart failure and arrhythmias, which in young athletes can be pretty devastating. And if there's a permanent damage to the heart muscle, you can imagine the impact that would have on an athlete's career. It could be very well career ending. So it's a big deal. I think we may be more publicized in the younger population, because a lot of the folks that came through, like during the first wave in New York, who developed cardiac problems, were in that older group, and a lot of them didn't survive. So we saw it, but we didn't see them often come out of the hospital to be able to have the long-term effects of them.
So, but do we know, and again, you know, I understand that, you know, this is a new virus and there's so many things that we don't know about it, and we won't know probably for years to come, right? But like, is there any understanding as to why this is happening?
Yeah, well, I think it's been known for a long time in the world of infectious disease that viruses of all kinds can affect the heart. I mean, if you look at patients who end up on a heart transplant list, a not insignificant percentage of those people are folks who are identified as having a quote-unquote viral myocarditis. So we've known for a long time that many viruses, you know, viruses attack cells based on the receptors on the cells. And so they can find their way into many different organs. And once they get there, and they start replicating, they can damage the tissue. They also incite a big inflammatory reaction, which is oftentimes the body's response to the virus is oftentimes the culprit for the damage to the tissue. So we do know physiologically why it does happen, but we don't know exactly who's going to have that particular organ be attacked. We haven't figured that out yet, but we do know that it does come along with many of the viruses that we've known about for a long time.
You know, and again, Dr. Nick Morrissey joined us here on 98.7 ESPN. I was reading there was a study that they did in Germany where they took 100 patients and that had contracted COVID-19. And out of those 100 and a variety of ages, not just the elderly, but out of those 100, 60% developed this heart issue. 60%. So, you know, I guess I know you said, you know, typically this isn't abnormal viruses. This heart issues could stem from viruses, but that seems like a very large percentage, this virus specifically.
Yeah, I mean, the virus is making its way throughout the body. And I think that study I'm not familiar with, but it may have been just sort of detecting the presence of virus or inflammation in the heart. Not everybody who gets, you know, direct involvement of the heart will develop symptoms afterwards. But, you know, it's a pretty high risk that if you develop some kind of cardiac infection and inflammation, you know, and again, you're talking about young people whose entire futures based on their fitness, it's potentially very devastating. And you also hear, I know that you've been keeping up on the health issues related to COVID, not just related to sports, but in general. And you do hear a lot of these stories about the post-infectious complications, people with chronic damage to their lungs, people who are fatigued, they don't have the energy that they used to have. These are the things that we're going to be talking about for years to come, and the post-COVID, and a lot of it's probably related to damage to the heart and the lungs and other organs, kidneys and things like that. So there is a whole, even after the vaccine is developed, there's going to be a whole percentage of people, of American citizens, who are going to have a post-COVID type illness. And when, when you're an athlete and your career depends on that, it's devastating.
By the way, the study was JAMA, J-A-M-A Cardiology did the study. Again, out of Germany, 100 patients, 60% had heart issues. Are there other concerns? I know the heart issue, as if that's not enough, right? The heart issue and potentially these young athletes derailing their professional careers, if, of course, that's in their future. But what are some of the other long-term issues and effects that you're seeing stem from COVID-19, contracting COVID-19 for young people, Nick?
Well, young people, it's this one becomes more noticeable because a lot of them, like you say, do emerge without, sometimes not even knowing that they had it, whereas a lot of older and sicker patients may not have as easy of a course. But, you know, long-term damage to the lungs is probably something that we need to worry about in all of these folks if they had respiratory symptoms, and even if they didn't. We did see early on risks, and you know about this, of blood clotting and emboli to the lungs, which can cause chronic lung damage, blood clots in the legs causing people to lose their limbs, kidney failure, which ended up with a fair number of people ending up on dialysis. Now, in the younger population that we're talking about, in the college athletes, the professional athletes, it's a very uncommon scenario. But as we've mentioned before, you know, if they're asymptomatic and they bring this home and someone older and more frail develops it, those are the kinds of complications that they're going to potentially develop. So there's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. By the way, before we start talking about tests and some other things I want to ask you about, I played golf the other day with a gentleman who helps run a hospital here in the area, and he was explaining to me, so people who have the antibodies for COVID-19, they are numbered. So and I'm just throwing this number out. Let's just say, like, if you recently contracted COVID-19 and you have antibodies, they might number your antibodies as like an 8 or a 9, where, and everybody's different, right? Let's say 3 months later or 5 months later, your antibody level now is down to a 1, and then eventually it diminishes. And because of that, you mentioned the vaccine. I think it's important what's being communicated to me, whether you can confirm or deny this, and that is, this isn't going to be like a polio vaccine. This is going to be more like a flu vaccine, where once a vaccine is developed, more than likely, it's going to be like a vaccine that we're going to need every year. Can you confirm or deny that?
Well, I think the CDC, this, you know, even just yesterday mentioned that it seems like the window of immunity that there's, and certain of is a strong word, but that they seem to be comfortable with is 3 months post-infection. And I think you're right, that you do see the antibodies start to wane, and the number, it just kind of reflects the relative amount of antibodies in the system. So we may be in a situation, and the virus is similar to a flu virus in the sense that, yes, you may need to get essentially a booster every time the season comes around. You know, but if we do develop a vaccine that's effective, you know, I think the enthusiasm and the willingness to produce it in enough volume to keep everybody safe is there. So I think once we achieve it, we're going to be okay, even if that does mean you get a shot every year. I for one, am perfectly okay doing that. The flu, you know, there are many different types of the flu. And as you know, you may get a flu vaccine, and that year there may be a different strain, and you may actually get sick. It's sort of, we do the best we can. I think with COVID-19, this is a very specific virus. And I think that if we do have an effective vaccine against it, even if it requires doing it once a year, I think it'll be very effective.
Nick, let's talk about testing, because now, you know, NFL is getting revved up, and in one of the stipulations or negotiating points for them as players agreed to come back was testing, and a lot of it. You know, obviously a lot of testing happening in Major League Baseball, you know, so now you've got all these sports, hockey, basketball, all these sports are up, back and running again. And, you know, these dudes need to be tested every day. So college football, from what I understand, they're testing each week. So what is that doing for the rest of us, Joe, you know, Joe Schmoes, you know, out here who need testing, you know, us non-college and professional athletes, what does that mean for us in the testing that's going on or lack thereof in the United States, around the country?
Well, there was a recent, there's an article from yesterday or so that mentioned that testing is on the down, the decline in terms of number of tests available. And we've seen some issues, you know, at the hospital relative to, because anybody who comes in now for a surgery needs to have a COVID test within a certain amount of time. And we have been fine there. We haven't had any issues, but we've had to accommodate because of shortages of tests. And I think, you know, there's no reason to blame professional sports or college sports, because they, you know, we want to keep these things going in a safe way and they should be able to test. But I think the message should be that every part of this country should be able to test at the level that's necessary to keep the organization going. So in other words, like, you don't want to think that your grandmother didn't get her heart surgery because she couldn't get a COVID test, and then sort of get angry at, you know, someone in the NBA because they got a test every day. We shouldn't be putting ourselves in that position. We should be in a position where there are plenty of tests for everybody and for all the things that we need to get through our day. And I think it's just that requires that we put a lot of resources into making sure the tests, the reagents, the swabs, and the turnaround time is adequate to keep, to, let's just put it this way, let every person in the United States have the level of testing that an NBA player has. That would be our goal, should be our goal. That doesn't mean you do it every day, but your turnaround time and your availability of it should be the same.
Nick, before I let you go, I'm curious, because, you know, you work at a hospital, you work out of a hospital. You know, what we're hearing is that once winter rolls around again, there's going to be an uptick in COVID-19 cases. I guess two-part question. Number one, are you anticipating that? And number two, if it does rear its ugly head again here in the New York and New Jersey area, how ready are hospitals going to be this time around?
You know, we've talked about the weather before and the temperature, but, you know, then they always, people say that, well, when it gets hot, it's going to go away. But, you know, the rest of the country, and especially the hottest areas, had this huge surge during the warm temperatures. So I do think, yes, there will be an increase. I think New York hospitals are actually quite well prepared. We've been through this. We went through it at a time when we had no time to prepare. And now we're dealing with the citizenry, which is really tuned into it, which has been very compliant as far as I can see. I went out to dinner last night in Manhattan, and masks were everywhere, and people were distancing, and it was very safe. So I think we're going to be much more well prepared. I don't think it's going to be the same steep peak like what we saw before. Just remember that in March and April, no one was wearing masks, right? And we were just learning about this. So it will... It's not going to rear its ugly head and come back. I think it's just always been here, and we just need to do our best to keep a lid on it. I don't think, and I may be wrong, that we're going to see really the horrors of what we did the first time around. And like I've said to you before, when we've talked on the show, I mean, no one wants to see that again. It's pretty devastating. But I think we're going to be in much better shape. And a lot of that has to do with people just doing the right thing. And I've been pretty happy to see that most people are doing the right thing.
You know, and like I said, I just going back to the conversation I had with my hospital friend that I played golf with last week, you know, another thing he said was, you know, we've learned so much. So when somebody does come in with COVID-19, we know, you know, whether or not we should put them on some type of breathing apparatus, what medicines we should use, when not to use. And, you know, he said, we're so much more knowledgeable now. in assessing how a virus has attacked a certain individual and how to treat that individual. He said where before everyone was just, you know, storming into the emergency room and we really didn't have a clue. And so I think that's promising as well, right?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, what he said and what the way you're interpreting it is exactly right. We took a crash course in March, April, May, and we came through it. But now I think we're much better prepared. And I think people take this seriously. I think the days of people ignoring this and thinking it's a hoax I really do believe that that's largely gone. I mean, there are pockets of resistance, but I think we are in a situation where people do take it seriously enough and are careful.
Well, I know we are around here. These parts, sir.
Yeah.
Not so much down where Mama Mimi lives, but these parts for sure. Nick, always a pleasure having you on the show. So appreciate you and your knowledge and everything. Thank you so much, my friend.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'll talk to you soon.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
He just doesn't know. Cynthia Freeland joining us now at the top of the hour. This is hour three here on 98.7 ESPN. Jacob, Cynthia has her own walk-up music.
I suck. Sorry about that, Cynthia.
All good. Oh, yeah, I like it up, you know? Gotta change it up every now and again.
And you don't
different
suck.
Swag,
you,
different feel.
You don't. He doesn't suck. He's fantastic. I love working with Jacob. He does a great job. Hi, Cynthia. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm playing golf every day, hiking, playing tennis. You know living that COVID-19 pandemic life outside, social distancing.
Oh man, you really got me thinking about golf right now. I need to go swing the club. Like it's so frustrating because I want to be good and I'm not. And like, I know it just takes time and reps, but like, man, it's frustrating because I want to go out there and just like be good, but I can't.
I played Upper Montclair yesterday with some friends. These two women who were out there, they're members out there, Kate and Elise. Elise won the ladies member championship, and they're both like plus twos, where I'm like I'm a 12 handicap. I got 20 strokes, okay, and these two, they're two young women, they're really phenomenal. They're from Penn State. They both played Penn State golf. And they're both new members out there at Upper Montclair. And so I went out and I played them. You want to talk about eating a piece of humble pie. I go out and I play, I'm competing. I shoot an 80. I'm like, yeah, I just got my butt handed to me last night. So, and I've been playing for a long time. So it's just one of those things. Like it's a very unique sport. It's hands down the most difficult sport I've ever played in my life. So
for sure. I'd rather a marathon. I get under 100 and I'm like throwing myself a party.
You're funny. All right. Let's talk some NFL. And also before you go, I have this fun little game. How long do I have you for, by the way? Like, are you free the rest of the time? Do I have you for like a good, let's say 25 minutes?
I mean, we can make that happen. We can make it happen.
Can we? Are you sure? I know it's like Saturday morning out. I mean, you're in California. Are you guys still quarantining? What's the deal? What's going on over there right now?
Well, yes, everything is pretty shut down here. You can't go eat inside of a restaurant. They've done a good job of, like in New York, I've heard, putting a lot of seating on the streets so that you can eat outside. So it's actually kind of cool. There's some positives there, but pretty much things are pretty slow here in LA and very, very not normal still. Trying, but not normal still.
All right. So let's dive into, fantasy football drafts are going to be here before we know it. And they always seem to kind of sneak up on us, which by the way, I came up with this idea, of hosting fantasy football drafts on Zoom where I'm kind of like the Vanna White where I have the draft board and I'm like, I'm updating the draft board. I'm commentating. I'm like analysis. I'm commentary on their draft picks. If they want to come to me and ask me who I would select at that pick, I would offer it to them. You think that's a you think people would be interested in that?
I think that's awesome. I think that'd be a great idea.
How about we do it together?
I'll do it with you. And I feel like maybe if, like, what if there's, you know, what, 12 people in the draft, maybe each of them can do like $5 donation to like, we like dogs. So maybe like, you know, an ASPCA or something like that. We could make it a thing for charity.
I love that idea. By the way, how are your dogs?
You know, they're great. They're just, they're living their best lives. They're happy. All dogs win in quarantine. The only thing that have come out winners in quarantine, everybody's dogs are happier because they get more time with their humans. They're just more cared for, you know, like there's a lot of exercise being had. Dogs are like the only quarantine winners, but it's a positive thing.
I've always said this. I think we as humans need dogs more than dogs need us. I don't know what I would have done. I don't know how I would have gotten through this, and we're still not through it. That's for sure. Without my babies. But anyway, all right. So you know, I watch all your videos on the NFL Network and all that you're doing and getting ready for fantasy football. Let's talk about the quarterback play. I mean, obviously Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes are going to be hot commodities, but I stand. Each and every year, I say I'm not touching a quarterback until at least round 9. So if that's the case, I'm not going to have Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes on my roster. So who are some of the quarterbacks that stand out to you, Cynthia, that you feel will be available when you do reach, let's say, you know, rounds 8, 9, 10?
I think a lot of people are sleeping on Baker Mayfield, and I think he's going to have a great year. I mean, Kevin Stefanski's ability to draw up play action passes that are effective, efficient, and made Kirk Cousins into the best play action passer, 14 touchdowns last season. I think that's the kind of thing that Baker Mayfield, with his experience from college, and, you know, he's talked about, like, you know, being humble this past off season. I think people are going to sleep on Baker Mayfield. And then I also think that you could stream some situations too. For example, if you look at the Chargers' first few games, it's like, what, Bengals, Chiefs, Panthers, Bucks, those are all teams where either going to be high scoring or an opportunity for a guy like Tyrod Taylor to get you off to a pretty good start if you really needed a streamer. So those are two that I'm looking at, because I think people, especially people in New York, the Daniel Joneses, I think that sleeping has gotten not sleepy anymore. People are woke to Daniel Jones at this point, right? I think he would have been a good one too, but I think he's going a little bit too high.
Gotcha. Guys that I like, I think Matthew Stafford is in line to have a big season. I like what they do offensively. And I love the Eagles and I love Carson Wentz. I love what they've done offensively. And look at what Carson Wentz was able to do last year, especially towards the end of the season with practice squad guys. Imagine if they actually have a roster of starters that can stay healthy. So these are two guys that I'm eyeing as in the later rounds. Do either of them interest you?
Yeah, I guess I just don't think that you're gonna be able to get. To me, I just don't know if they're gonna be around that late, right? Like Matthew Stafford's always underrated. Like people always forget about Matthew Stafford, and this is a guy who, you know, year in and year out takes like a ton of passing attempts. Their offense has not featured a running back that's really done them any good, so they've had to pass for a lot. And the Lions aren't very good on defense, so those two things make for a quarterback that in fantasy is going to help you out. So I guess to me, and I'm from Michigan, so maybe I don't undervalue Matthew Stafford or overlook Matthew Stafford as often as others. So that one's interesting for sure. And I also think because the Eagles are such a rabid fan base, I also think Carson Wentz won't be undervalued. So I guess my point is I like both of them, but I just don't know if they'll be around like that late.
Got it. Running back wise, no brainer. 1, 2, 3, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, maybe 4, Derrick Henry. Like, is this going to be another one of those years where, you know, the first, let's say 4 or 5 picks are all running backs?
For a number of reasons, but this year, especially because you've got no preseason and you've got no kind of time for the offense to get together. And what you've seen out of coaches historically in the beginning of seasons and when things are uncertain, the running back position is a position of certainty. So you know you hand that thing off and you know Derrick Henry's running the rock. So it's just a bit more certainty when it comes to a really uncertain off season. So you could maybe argue the order of like, oh, do you like Saquon more than Zeke or Zeke more than Saquon? But is that even a real argument? No, it's just ridiculous. So, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to pay it off. Those guys will pay it off. And I do think people maybe are looking at Clyde Edwards-Helaire a little bit too high. So, you know, obviously Damian Williams of the Chiefs opted out, not playing this season. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire is like that Andy Reid prototype type of running back. And people are like, oh, I saw his ADP go up all the way to 5. That's ridiculous. I think he's running back 10. Value him there. You probably won't get him. Let someone else overvalue it. But remember, just don't overvalue. The value is all about where you get someone, not about, you know, don't reach.
So Cynthia Freeland is on the is on the clock. She's got the number one pick overall. Who does she select?
CMC, 100%.
Number two?
I go Saquon.
Number three?
Zeke, and then number four might surprise you.
Ooh, surprise us.
Michael Thomas. I think he's worth taking in top five for sure.
Even with the addition of Emmanuel Sanders.
I don't care. That makes it better for Michael Thomas. Like, he might not catch 149 passes. Okay. But what if he gets you 130 and you're playing PPR? Obviously this is PPR league, right? To me, it's, you know, in a PPR situation, Michael Thomas is, third or fourth. For sure. It's just the number of catches he's going to get. The fact that, I mean, I think Alvin Kamara is going to have a ridiculous year, too. He's caught 81 passes exactly, like, what, two seasons now in a row. So both of those two could equally be your fourth pick, but they're 4-5 or 5-4. So both are in the top five for me.
All right, let's talk about wide receivers. And, you know, besides the obvious ones that everybody's going to draft in the first few rounds, let's talk about some guys that can fall that I'm expecting big seasons from. And there's two DJs, DJ Moore and DJ Chark. I like both these cats. Do you?
Love Moore. I'm 100% with you on Moore. I think Moore, I mean, he was already sneaky, top 10 in the last season. So he's not going to do worse this season. He has a better situation, a better offense, a better scheme, and a better quarterback. So he's in a good spot to at least match, if not exceed. I'm with you on that one. Now, Chark for me is interesting because people are kind of overlooking Laviska Shenault, and they drafted him. And Shenault is like a bit more like, he has more like a Christian McCaffrey type of, you know, projection for me, where he was used at Colorado as a running back. He's kind of like a Swiss Army knife. So if they can get him going, because remember, Chark had some health issues. There were some connection issues, drops issues. I just don't overvalue him. I think some people are like, they talk themselves into DJ Chark and they put him like way up there, like, you know, with like a Stephon Diggs or something like that. And I think that's overvaluing him a bit. So I say put him in the 20s, get him there, and 20s meaning wide receiver 20, not 20 overall. And I think you're going to get some good value for that. But remember, Laviska Shenault will vulture some of that because if he's healthy, assuming everyone's healthy, right? He has like just such a multiple use case scenario, and that offense and that defense is a little messy. And so I think they're going to be looking for anything that they need to pull the rabbit out of the hat.
Last but not least, even though, you know, who knows who the quarterback might be, but Terry McLaurin, Washington, love him as well.
I love Terry McLaurin. Will they give him some help? I got a lot of flack on Twitter because I rated both the wide receivers and running backs for Washington as 32. But that's where they fell. And not because of Terry McLaurin, but who's helping him out? It really, you know, Terry McLaurin's a wideout one. Absolutely. Had a great first season and a second season. Hopefully he has a great second season too. I really like him. But who's the quarterback? What's their O-line like? And are they going to be able to get, you know, that run-play balance that they need to in order to make the passing plays really work out? So it's poor Terry. He's such an undervalued receiver, but my goodness, it's going to be such tough sledding for him with all the attention put on him this season.
Last but not least, when it comes to fantasy football, looking at the tight end position this year, it's like it's the have and the have-nots. There's no middle class here, right? To me, it's Travis Kelce, George Kittle. Both of them obviously got deservingly paid. Zach Ertz, Waller, Mark Andrews, and then boom, it cuts off. So is this a year that you want to reach and maybe draft a tight end sooner than normal?
See, maybe. I mean, if you can get one of those guys, that you mentioned, sure. But I don't know. The Waller one scares me a little bit because Oakland, they've got some new pass catchers in Oakland, like wide receivers. So as much as they like went to the Waller bag of tricks last season, I think they're going to need their average depth of pass to be a little bit longer. And I think Gruden will get it to his speedsters. Like, he wants those fast guys to be catching balls. So I would be careful on your, like, Waller's got a lot of upside, but like, I wouldn't reach for Waller. If you're getting the other ones, maybe reach for them. But I do think there's some sneaky ones like the Hayden Hursts or TJ Hawkinsons or the guys who are, you know, in line to take a pretty big step forward this season based on, you know, even Chris Herndon and for the Jets. Remember, who's going to catch passes for them? Like, I have no idea. So just you can get some value later. Just don't, I don't know. Unless you're getting one of those top four guys, I wouldn't do it. I mean, Waller, just take Waller out of that. And then sure, you could reach up for the top four.
All right, Cynthia, before we let you go, we're going to play a little He Said, She Said. You ready?
You got it.
All right, Jacob, hit it.
This is He Said, She Said.
All right, here we go. Quotes from this past week that these dudes said, and I want to hear your reaction to them. John Gruden coming out talking about Marcus Mariota, saying that he is a quote-unquote dazzling playmaker. Is there a quarterback controversy in Las Vegas?
I think there is. I know that sounds crazy, but I think there is. I think that Mariota is gonna challenge for the top spot. I don't think it's Carr's, unquestionably.
Baker Mayfield, I lost myself in the 2019 chaos. Obviously, you just talked about Baker Mayfield as one of the quarterbacks that you think will be available in rounds 9, if not lower. So obviously, are you believing in that self-evaluation and expecting bigger and better from him this year?
Yep.
Just that simple. Okay.
Yeah.
Leonard Fournette came out and said, I'm not a jerk. Of course, a lot of people think he's selfish, not committed to the team or his teammates. Poor work ethic. Thoughts on Fournette and what can you expect from him this season?
I don't know if the Jags like seem to like him. You know, there was he got a lot of touches last year. It wasn't super productive. I think the Jets and Fournette are headed for divorce. I don't think it's a good. I think Leonard Fournette, I'm not going to be taking him in fantasy unless he drops significantly, but I'm not looking at Fournette.
Okay. Here's an interesting one. Bill Belichick talking about Cam Newton, hardworking Cam. That's what he had to say about Cam, which, by the way, third team reps, not even second, but third team reps. Thoughts on Cam Newton. Do you still believe, Cynthia Freeland, that Cam Newton will be the starting quarterback for the Patriots week one?
We got, 25 days, something like that? He's starter.
Yep.
He's the starter. You don't put an MVP in. Sure, you make him take some third string reps. You know why? Because it keeps him humble, and Bill Belichick can do that because Bill Belichick's got all those rings.
All right, I got a box of Pro-V golf balls that I'm wagering with Mike Tannenbaum on this. You and I think what you were on like 2 weeks ago, we've got a bottle of wine on this, right?
I like our bet better than Tannenbaum. Tell Tannenbaum he needs to up the
ante. Hey, listen.
Come on.
Wine and golf balls. That's how you get to my heart. Wine and golf balls. I'm still on Stidham. And by the way, you can wager on that. Stidham, week one starting quarterback for the Patriots. It's still at plus 300, plus 350. I'm just letting you know because I know how much you like shoes just as much as I do. Dak came out this week, took a bus, and ran over Jason Garrett. Talked about, you know, maybe we weren't as knowledgeable, and I'm paraphrasing here, in regard to all that we needed to know and learn in regard to our offensive playbook. And now kind of the grass is a little greener. What does that say about Jason Garrett? And should Giants fans have concern for Daniel Jones, considering he's now the offensive coordinator here in New York?
Okay, Giants fans, you're going to like what Jason Garrett has for you. If Jason Garrett hadn't created a plan that allowed for Dak Prescott to learn the playbook and understand, remember, if you look to see what happened when Dak became a starter. They didn't try the tricky passes. They got him in a rhythm, and then they folded in deeper outside the number passes when he was ready, when the receivers had the chemistry. The coach and the scheme and the play calling, which, by the way, I don't know if Jason Garrett himself was calling the plays for a long time, but it was his system. And that system will help unfold and teach, you know, and allow for the chemistry to develop. So you got to, I guess, in my opinion, like, sometimes you can have bad blood and you can say some snarky comments and you can do whatever, but the facts are the facts. Jason Garrett has a long history of being a good teacher, and I think if you look to see what Jason Garrett's going to do in New York for a guy like Daniel Jones, who was under so much pressure last season, and then this season, when you see what his results were last season, when he was under pressure, he was awesome. So this season, creating the scheme and the opportunities for him to grow and develop and do the things that quarterbacks need to do, namely, like, learn how to execute the offense, right? Like, that's what Jason Garrett is best at. So Dak can say what he wants now, looking back, but they led the league in yards per game. So something was doing it right, and it wasn't all Dak. It wasn't all, you know, Zeke. It wasn't all these. It was all of the pieces working together. So
last but not least, Amari Cooper came out and said that all three wide receivers, Gallup, him, and CeeDee Lamb, should put up 1,000 receiving yards each. We haven't seen that since, what, Washington, right? The posse with Gary Clark and the fellas. Is that even possible? Especially since they have Ezekiel Elliott back there, Cynthia. Is that just the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard? Or do you think, hey, yeah, you know what? It's possible with that wide receiving core and Dak Prescott.
Well, look at what Mike McCarthy's done in his past, right? The guy runs more 11, so three wide receiver personnel sets. He ran a hugely high percentage, top of the league, all of the years that he was with Aaron Rodgers. It is entirely possible they're going to have a lot of three receiver sets, maybe even four. But I don't know about 1,000 each. I think it's probably more likely that two of them reach 1,000, and maybe the third one gets, you know, in the 700 or 800, which is still a ridiculously awesome season in terms of pass catchers. But they don't have a tight end vulturing, you know, many of the receptions. So it's possible. I would say probably not likely, but I do think two of them exceed 1,000.
And this has been He Said, She Said with Anita Marks and the wonderful and fabulous Cynthia Freeland. Cynthia, you rock. Thank you for your time this afternoon or this morning out on the West Coast. Glad that you sound great. I'm glad that you're healthy and you're safe, and always appreciate you, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. And I can't wait for us to actually get back into season.
I know.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.